It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wigbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Too often what happens is kids get put out of school with no education at all, which just means that they're sitting at home unsupervised with whoever else is home in the neighborhood unsupervised or not working during the day. And so one way that I think about it is that zero tolerance policies too often take a significant school problem and potentially make it a much more significant community problem.
Attorney Andy Block from the Just Children Program discusses the rights of children to basic educational opportunity and the legal protections when they face suspension or expulsion in the first part of a two-part interview. And you'll find out what can happen when a landlord misrepresents the facts to a court during an unlawful detainer eviction hearing during this week's question and answer. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 63, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. When a child becomes homeless or is in transition during a school year, the result can be very disruptive. But those children have legal protections under the McKinney-Vento Homeless Act. If a child is staying with friends of the family due to homelessness or living in emergency or transitional shelter, such as a motel, domestic violence shelter, or abandoned building, the child still has a right to go to school. The child can be enrolled in a new school immediately without providing any paperwork, and the new school must obtain the school records from the prior school and help the child get immunizations. Or the child can remain in his or her current school, even if living outside the school district, and get free transportation from the transitional home to the current school. For help, ask to speak with the school's McKinney-Vento contact person. Each school system has one. To find a school system's contact person, call Project Hope toll-free at 1-877-455-3412. In other news, many landlords offer what's called a rent concession, a lower rent than what normally would be charged, but only if the tenant remains in the rental unit through the end of the lease. If the tenant leaves early, whether voluntarily or by eviction, the lease states that the rent concession, often $100 to $200 a month, is forfeited and becomes due and payable immediately. But recently, a City of Richmond General District Court judge found such a provision in the lease unenforceable. The case involved VAC, which rents hundreds of apartments in the Richmond area. When the tenant paid the rent late for the second time, after a court case had been filed, the landlord got a judgment for possession only, but also asked for a judgment for the rent concession for the prior 7 months, totaling $1,302. The court refused to award a judgment for the rent concession, holding it to be an unenforceable penalty because it was grossly in excess of actual damages. The decision calls into question the enforceability of similar forfeits of rent concession that are widely used in the Richmond area. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is school suspension and expulsion. A suspension or expulsion is the temporary or permanent removal of a child from school. A short-term suspension is 10 days or less. A long-term suspension is anything more than 10 days, but with a fixed return date. And an expulsion means the child is removed from school and must reapply to the school board for readmission. Children can be removed from school for almost any reason, as long as it is a violation set forth in the local school board's code of conduct. Students are entitled to notice and an opportunity for a hearing before the principal, the superintendent, and the school board. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and school suspension and expulsion is this week's legal term of the week.
It's time for this week's question and answer, and we're here in the studio with this week's questioner. Tell us your name and where you're from.
My name is Renee. I'm from Chesterfield County.
Welcome to the show, Renee. What question do we have this week?
Well, I have a situation. I have an issue with my landlord. I pay my rent. I was late. I pay my late fees. I had to also pay a filing fee. I covered all of those, and the apartment complex, which my landlord, went and filed an unlawful detainer. Now, my question is, if they ask the judge to vacate the written of possession and also get rid of the judgment, is it possible that I can file a lawsuit for basically them committing fraud?
Okay, Renee, as I understand it, you paid everything they asked for before court, and they went ahead and got a judgment of possession against you anyway, including the court costs you paid and the attorney's fees they said you didn't have to pay. And then when this was pointed out to them, they went ahead and vacated the judgment and undid everything. But you think that you still got defrauded and you want to know what your rights are in that situation. Is that basically your question?
Yes.
Well, Renee, what they did clearly was wrong. If you pay the filing fees, they're not supposed to go into court and get a judgment for something that you've already paid. And indeed, the court system really relies on people being honest and candid with the court. And if they ask for a judgment for something you've already paid, like the filing fees, and you can prove that you paid those filing fees, then that certainly is misleading or really fraudulent, certainly to the court as well as to you as a tenant. Now, what you can do about it is probably a different matter, because it sounds like the landlord, when this mistake was pointed out to the landlord, went ahead and, quote, fixed everything. They got rid of or vacated the judgment. They no longer have possession. You do. There's no longer a judgment against you for court costs or for attorney's fees. And so I guess the question here is, how have you been harmed? And it doesn't sound like you've really been harmed. You still have possession of the apartment. You don't have a judgment against you, and you're not really out of pocket any money. It's been a headache. It's been a nightmare. It's been a nuisance. And I suppose if it got to the point of such stress and harassment that you had to have some type of, you know, mental health intervention and had to pay for that, you might have a claim for damages. But this happens quite frequently, both in terms of landlords saying they'll do something and then not following through on their promise. Sometimes it's intentional, sometimes it's just pure carelessness and negligence. But then even if it is carelessness or negligence that is something you could sue over, the question is then, what are your damages? How have you been harmed? What would you have the court award you? And in this case, probably it would be zero. Now, that's not to say you might not have a claim in the future. If you had a repeated pattern of doing something like this, if the landlord did this to you over and over again, or especially if they did it to you and other tenants over and over again, I could see a better outcome, because then it becomes more than just a mistake. It becomes a pattern in practice that they really are systematically defrauding the courts and violating the rights of tenants. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does, Marty, and thank you so much.
You're most welcome. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the offices of Just Children in Charlottesville, Virginia, and we're talking with Andy Block, who is the director of the Just Children program. Welcome to the show, Andy.
Happy to be here, Marty.
And we're going to be talking today about education law, focusing on school discipline. But let's start with the Virginia Constitution, which I understand, unlike the federal constitution, provides students the fundamental right to an education meeting the standards of quality. How enforceable or how realistic is this to expect that children have this constitutional right in Virginia?
Well, the Virginia Supreme Court has said that children have a fundamental right to an education. The Virginia Constitution, as you mentioned, unlike the federal constitution, actually has portions of it dedicated to education specifically. It might be interesting to some listeners to note that the United States Constitution doesn't mention the word education in it. The courts have said in a case where some school divisions were challenging their lack of funding, that although children have a fundamental right to an education, unless someone could prove that the education they were receiving did not meet the standards of quality, that right was not implicated or was not violated. So they haven't expanded their analysis to other situations. What does that right mean? Who does it apply to? But I think that we believe that there are other areas where, at some point in the not-so-distant future, courts may want to ask that question. And we have certainly raised it in school discipline hearings. We've never had a court opinion ruling on the way that it applies to kids who are facing suspension or expulsion, but I expect that sometime soon that will happen.
We have been in an era of zero tolerance. How has that affected school discipline? Why are children being removed, and are they being removed unnecessarily?
Well, I think that the whole zero tolerance movement was prompted by some tragic and high profile school shootings like Columbine and Paducah, Kentucky. And the federal government passed a law that, if you don't read it carefully, you might interpret to mean that children who get in trouble at school, children who bring weapons, children who bring drugs have to be expelled. And I think that's how many school boards across the country have interpreted it. It actually says that people can exercise discretion, but that's not always what's happened. Zero tolerance, in my mind, it means different things to different people, but to me, it means a one-size-fits-all approach to kids who get in trouble. The problem with it is that it's a bit short-sighted. Yes, we don't want kids who have weapons or cause fights or bring drugs to school in school, but what it doesn't address is what are we going to do with them when they take them out of school? And too often what happens is kids get put out of school with no education at all, which just means that they're sitting at home unsupervised with whoever else is home in the neighborhood unsupervised or not working during the day. And so one way that I think about it is that zero tolerance policies too often take a significant school problem and potentially make it a much more significant community problem.
In other words, they're basically exporting the problem. They're not solving it.
Exactly. And then what they're also doing is they are creating a situation where it's going to be incredibly difficult for that student to get back on track educationally. They recently released some data on kids who dropped out in Virginia, and And some of the biggest correlating factors were kids who were too old for their grade, overaged and undercredited, and kids who had missed school. And so you take a kid who may be having a hard time anyway and gets in trouble at school and say, you're not going to get any education for a year, you're pretty much ensuring that he's going to have a really hard time to graduate and is going to be much more likely to become a dropout. And then, of course, the statistics on what happens with dropouts are pretty alarming. There's some recent data that suggests that African-American kids who don't successfully complete high school, by the time they're 35, there's a 60% chance they will be in adult prison. Or put another way, 60% of those people who didn't get high school diplomas who are 35 and are people of color have done time in prison. And if we don't educate our children, if we don't give them what they need to finish school successfully, the odds go up incredibly that they will land in the correction system, find themselves homeless, be underemployed or not employed at all. And so there's lots of statistics that show that undereducated kids and kids who don't finish high school are at much greater risk of getting in bigger trouble later in their lives.
Well, Andy, there are procedural protections for a child who the school system wants to either suspend on a short-term basis or suspend on a long-term basis or even expel them entirely. Could you describe for our listeners what those protections are?
Sure. It might be interesting to your listeners to know that the United States Supreme Court has actually heard a case involving children who were suspended from school. And the Supreme Court said in that case, it was a case called Goss v. Lopez, and it was, I think, in 1975, if I remember correctly, has said that you can't throw kids out of school without any opportunity for them to explain their side of the story. You know, what judges and lawyers call it is due process, but it's basically you have to tell people what they're accused of and give them an opportunity to explain their side of the story. What that means in practice, and that case just involved a short-term suspension, not an expulsion, is that at a minimum, a student has to be able to explain to the principal, no, I didn't do it, or Johnny pushed me, and that's why I pushed him back, or, you know, the drugs that were in my backpack, someone put there, or whatever their explanation is. The way that those protections are provided in Virginia is that when a child gets in trouble at school, the first stop is the principal's office or the assistant principal's office, and they make some evaluation of what the kid has been charged with or accused of, and then make a recommendation for punishment and say you're going to be suspended for the rest of the year because you got in a fight in the cafeteria. And so they send Johnny home, and in the next couple of days have to send a letter to Johnny's parents saying, Johnny's been suspended for 10 days for punching another kid in the cafeteria, and my recommendation is that he be suspended for the rest of the year. Now, if parents don't do anything beyond that, that's the punishment Johnny's going to get. But what the letter home has to also include is the notice that they have the right to appeal that decision.
And who do they appeal that to?
Typically, the appeal goes to the superintendent of the school division or someone the superintendent has designated to hear those appeals. And that, it's not a very formal process. It's often a meeting. And if the parent and student are not satisfied with that decision, then they can appeal it to the full school board or some committee of the school board. If they're not pleased with what the school board has to say, they can then appeal that to circuit court. Now, the important thing, I think, for people to know is that if you don't file that initial appeal, you're stuck with the status quo. So whatever the principal recommends, you're stuck with unless you challenge it. I think another thing that's worth knowing is that you don't have to have a lawyer to engage in those appeals, at least through the school board. If you want to go to circuit court, I think you need a lawyer. Or a lawyer would really help. But what you really need to do at those appeals is make sure that the superintendent and the school board have an understanding of who your child is, what may have caused them to do this, that you take it seriously, that they are remorseful for what they've done, that there are other steps being taken to make sure it doesn't happen again. Because oftentimes, all the superintendent is going to know is that Johnny is a nose puncher. And he's not going to know anything more about Johnny. And so what I tell parents and people who work with kids is you need to bring the community into the school so that he has a deeper understanding of who your child is.
And I believe you've also said that you need to both grovel and threaten. What do we mean by this?
I think that's right. Well, when I talk to lawyers, lawyers are often in the business of threatening. And because you want the decision to be the right one as soon as possible so the kid can get back in school, I think you have to really balance how you approach these cases. And sometimes the best approach is making your client out or making the student out to be as sympathetic as possible and just saying to the superintendent or the school board, come on, you know, there's a better way to do this. Sometimes you have to go in as a lawyer and say, look, you didn't give him his meeting, you violated his rights, you did various things, and we're going to sue you if you don't do the right thing. But the courts, generally speaking, don't want to meddle with what school boards decide. And so you really want to get the right decision at the school board level. And I think you have to evaluate, are you going to get that with vinegar or are you going to get that with honey?
Now let's assume that the decision didn't go the right way and the student has a long-term suspension maybe to the end of the year or possibly even an expulsion. What duties, if any, does the school have to educate them to do some kind of alternate school placement?
Well, the way that people understand Virginia law today, there is no duty to do anything for a student who's been suspended or expelled unless the student is a student who receives special education services or a student with a disability. But if it's not a student who receives special education services, there is no obligation. Now, our view of that is that if the state constitution makes education a fundamental right, that right, according to the courts, can only be violated or infringed upon or taken away in the most narrowly tailored way to serve a strong interest of the government. And we certainly agree that having safe schools is a strong interest, but sending a child home and giving them no education at all, in our view, is not the most narrowly tailored way to achieve that. And so we have argued in pleadings in various circuit courts that if you send a kid home and give him nothing, you're violating his fundamental right to an education. And those cases have all resolved themselves before a court ruling. So we don't know what the judge is going to say about that.
This week's top three tips are about guardian ad litem. The first tip is that a guardian ad litem is an attorney appointed by a court to look out for and protect the interests of a person under a legal disability during a civil court case. Legal disability refers to a person who is in jail or prison under the age of 18, on active military duty, in a mental hospital, or found by a court to legally not be of sound mind. The second tip is that sometimes the fees for the guardian ad litem are paid by the court, but usually the person filing the case pays the fees. The third tip is that once the court case has ended by a final order, the attorney no longer serves as guardian ad litem. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King. And for this week, that's our top three tips about a guardian ad litem.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. Also, if you have a question you would like answered or any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. Please include your name and phone number. You also can leave that same information before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. by calling 200-6045. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Brown versus Board of Education assured equality of education regardless of a child's race. But what about regardless of a child's disability? Tune in next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when we continue our interview with attorney Andy Block from the Just Children Program about the rights of children with disabilities to special education which is equal to that provided non-disabled students. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.